really functional broken tongue. Cantate 4, chapter 24, text number 34. Namaha Pankajana Bhaya Buddha Six Buddha Sukshmendriyatmane
Buddha Sukshmendriyatmane
Vasudevaya Sandhaya
Vasudevaya Sandhaya
Kutastaya Svarupchise Namaha Pankajanabhaya Bhuta Sukshmendriyatmane Vasudevaya Santhaya Kutastaya Svalochise Namaha Pankajanabhaya Buddha Sukshmendriyatmane Vasudevaya Santhaya Kutastaya Svarupchise Namaha.
Namaha.
All obeisances unto you.
All obeisances unto you.
Pankajanabhaya. Unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
From whose navel,
the lotus flower emanates.
Buddha Sukshma.
The sense objects.
Indriya.
The senses.
Atmane.
The
origin.
Vasudevaya.
Unto Lord
Vasudev.
Shantaya,
Shantaya.
Always peaceful.
Kutastaya,
Kutastaya.
Without being changed.
Svarochise.
Unto the supreme illumination.
My Lord. So, of course, this is Lord Shiva addressed the Supreme Personality of Godhead with the following prayer. So he's speaking to the king's sons, called the Vachetas, 10 sons of the king. They have very fortunately come across Lord Shiva, and he is speaking this prayer for everyone's auspiciousness. So Lord Shiva addressed the Supreme Personality of God with the following prayer. That's the previous verse, and this one he continues, "My Lord, you are the origin of the creation by virtue of the lotus flower which sprouts from your navel. You are the supreme controller of the senses and the sense objects, and you are also the all-pervading Vasudeva. You are most peaceful, and because of your self-illuminated existence, you are not disturbed by the 6 kinds of transformations." Purported by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The Lord, as Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, lies in the ocean of Garbha within this universe. And from his navel, the lotus flower sprouts. Lord Brahma is generated from that lotus flower. And from Lord Brahma, the creation of this material world begins. As such,
the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, is the origin of the material senses and sense objects. So here, in these prayers, of course, there is often some misunderstanding as to whether Lord Vishnu is supreme. Of course, in Gita, Krishna describes that he is Lord Vishnu, Vasudeva, the super soul, or whether someone else is supreme. Perhaps Lord Shiva. Sometimes it would appear that anyone else can be supreme except Krishna. But factually here, Lord Shiva is describing that Krishna, in his expansion as Vishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, is supreme because each of us, of course, is in this material world. We didn't create ourselves. Someone else created us, and we have different senses, particular type of body, all living entities, from Brahma, Shiva, all the way down to the little germs. They all have a body with senses. None of them created themselves. And even Shiva here is acknowledging, I didn't create myself. There was Brahma. From Brahma, then came Shiva, so many other demigods, all coming. So he's saying here that actually the creator of everyone's senses, with his own energy, and thus the Lord, the controller, is Lord Vishnu. Since Lord Shiva considers himself to be one of the products of the material world, his senses are under the control of the Supreme Creator. So, of course, here Lord Shiva is also acknowledging that it was under the Lord's will and control that Lord Shiva himself manifested in this world for the Lord's purpose. Lord Shiva cannot act independently. That if the Lord decides, I will manifest Lord Shiva in each universe, and Lord Shiva cannot say, oh no, I'm not going there. I don't want to be created like that. I'll do something else. No. He must. So he is, in that sense, a product of the material world. His senses are under the control of the Supreme Creator. So Lord Shiva is acknowledging that. And of course, we know that amongst the demigods, personalities like Brahma and Shiva, they are supreme, what to speak of others. So these are, these particular pastimes. There are many such pastimes within the Vedic scriptures. And of course, we know that Lord Shiva himself, a question I always like to ask the followers of Lord Shiva, but why does Lord Shiva, why is he seen with the little Ganges water emanating from his matted hair? And they all look, because, they have that look as if to say, well, we've been following Lord Shiva for thousands of years and I have no idea. That sort of look. And, generation after generation, first question, no idea. And so a little bit of embarrassment there. But, which there should be. So, I explain, well, of course, the scriptures proclaim it, again and again, that he carries the dust of Hari on his head. He carries the dust of Hari, his Lord, on his head. My Lord, I will put your dust on my head. You are my Lord. I worship you. I worship the dust of your feet on my head. That is his position. So you only have to look at Lord Shiva and you can understand that he accepts Vishnu, Krishna, as his Lord. And it is stated again and again in the scriptures. So there's no real argument. And here he is speaking those words. So then, the Supreme Lord is also known as Hrishikesh, the master of the senses, which indicates that our senses and sense objects are formed by the Supreme Lord. As such, he can control our senses and out of his mercy engage them in the service of the master of the senses. In the conditioned state, the living entity struggles in this material world and engages his senses for material satisfaction. However, if the living entity is graced by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he can engage these very senses in the service of the Lord. Lord Shiva desires not to be misled by the material senses, but to engage always in the service of the Lord without being subject to contamination by materialistic influences. So even he is praying to the Lord that he understands that I need the mercy of Lord Vishnu so that my senses are properly engaged, because he has that control to be engaged in spiritual activities, or to be our senses to be subjected to the illusory material impure activities of material contamination. He understands that that's within the power of the Lord to give that control. So by the grace and help of Lord Vasudeva, who is all-pervading, one can engage his senses in devotional service without deviation, just as the Lord acts without deviation. So it is Lord Shiva is understanding. So he's a very, very powerful person. So this is a very significant point, because we all want to, you know, that's why we come here, to hear and to fix our mind, purify our existence, because we would rather be engaged in spiritual activities, which are very blissful, and not producing material body after material body. We want that. But that situation where our senses are always engaged in spiritual activity, for that we need the controller of our senses to give us permission and the ability. And even Lord Shiva, who's considered the greatest of Vaishnavas, is thinking in these terms, what to speak of us. And of course here also we're perceiving that, you know, the Lord owns our senses. He manifested these senses. He manifested them with his own energy, and he controls them. He's a proprietor. So friends, we all have homes or ashrams. You know, even if you're a brahmachari, you've still got your little room. Remember, you know, there's brahmacharis who used to sleep on the floor upstairs. But we had one little metal locker. So no one else could put their things on top of our locker. So though we're brahmacharis, we still, you know, and no one can sleep in front of our locker, because we used to just lie on the floor there. So we had, you know, some control over that little space. Some little control. Because we were never there, we were always out, you know, sleeping on the ground, you know, preaching somewhere, sleeping by the river anyway. So we have very little proprietorship over it. Actually, we had very little proprietorship over anything in those days, but we had some. I remember when I got married, my parents and my wife's parents gave us some gifts. You know, because eventually, because we lived here in the temple. My wife lived up in the Brahmachari Ashram, which was upstairs up there, and I still lived with the Brahmacharis for a long, long time. But we had a little metal trunk and some of the gifts. There weren't very much, a few plates, a few cups, maybe. So when we moved into the flat, eventually we'd have something to eat on. And that wasn't much, a little food. Anyway, we both went out on Sangitan, and she went with the ladies, I went with the men. And when we come back, we went to get our trunk, which we'd left upstairs, and where's our trunk? Maharaj decided it was taking up too much room, they threw it out in the rubbish. So we had very little. We had some. My wife also, when we lived in my previous wife, when we lived in Perth, we lived in a house there. So we, this is going back to the early 80s, we were trying to establish a temple there. So we had one house, so there was not many people, probably half a dozen or so. So the men lived upstairs, you know, nice carpeted room. Everything, Brahmacharis, mostly one or two rooms. Temple president had his room with his wife and little girl. And my wife lived downstairs in the garage. It was a double garage. But just concrete like that. So when we used to purchase the books would come in the truck, and we'd build a little wall, keep it warm in the winter. And as we distributed the books, her room disappeared. So, anyway, we had a little, you know, a little control, a little proprietorship, but not a lot. We tried to practice by voluntarily or by force that everything belongs to Krishna. This temple is. You know, the property of Krishna, actually it's the property of Prabhupada. And because Krishna has given that to Prabhupada, it's for him to do as he pleases. So, you know, generally as devotees, we come here and we look at things in terms of, you know, that, or, you know, these are the temple mats, this is the temple sound. You know, certain things we don't take out of the temple room and, you know, like that. Other people come here, they don't. They think, oh, here's a nice pair of shoes. I could sell them. So, because a lot of devotees just sometimes wear their old shoes here, because some people don't have the same mentality that everything belongs to Krishna. So, anyway, you know, the senses of this body. As devotees, we understand this body actually belongs to Krishna. You know, there was Sanatana Goswami, when he felt great separation after the disappearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he actually wanted to commit suicide. And he went to Vrindavan, and he was going to jump off Govardhan Hill. And his, you know, the other Goswamis, I think it was Sanatana. But he was told that you can't do that. You've already surrendered your body to Krishna. That's his. That's not your property to just destroy. So you know, he understood this body belongs to Krishna. This body, these senses, cannot. So you know, this is. The understanding of a devotee is that, you know, these senses, there is proprietorship. So of course, you know, if we encroach upon someone else's property, Then there's some ramifications. None of us can just wander into someone else's home, someone else's, ashram, place, and just do as we please. If we do, big problems. These bodies, all the senses, they're actually Krishna's. And we don't actually, even Lord Shiva is acknowledging that all the senses of his body, they belong to Krishna. He doesn't have the independence to just say, I'll do as I please with them. And to engage them nicely, just like if we come in and we want to utilize any of the things in this temple, even to serve Krishna, still we have to get permission. Even if we say, oh, I'm coming into the temple, I'm going to use so many things in Krishna's service, we can't even do that. We actually have to get permission, and we have to be guided that it can be done like this at these times like that. So, that takes some training. It takes a lot of training. Many, many years. It's surprising how sometimes devotees think they're really quickly trained up, but they're not. There's many examples, I see. I'll just give one. So we have, I was speaking to a devotee about it this morning as he was grabbing his bike there, because we have the new Jagya Kund, the pavilion. So I remember many years ago, because just sitting in the mud there, that this time of year, there was just tiny little few specks of grass, and most of it was mud, and there was no shelter, no tent. Middle of summer, you're out in the sun, little babies, and winter, you're out there in the rain. I did a few ceremonies in the rain. There was no other option. So then gradually it was paved, they put some bricks down, and then there was a tent there, one of them threw away. And then we had this nice pavilion. Now the interesting thing is that, the proper understanding is that, that is a place that belongs to Srila Prabhupada. Was established for, perhaps we can do some entertain guests there, serve some prasadam, do a few ceremonies, things like that. But actually, it's become the local bike rack. So if you go there, which happens to me a lot, you go there, someone wants a ceremony, there's a whole array of bikes for that. It's actually a place where we worship Srimati Radharani and Krishna. You imagine we get back to the spiritual world. Oh, here's Radha Kund. I could use this for a nice bike rack. Actually, strange enough, when the devotees first went to Radha Kund in the early days, coming from the West, because when you get young Western boys and girls, there's a big pool, there's a place to splash and yell and play and carry on. So they were doing that. Prabhupada had to, no. This is the most sacred place in the universe. even one time, one devotee asked Prabhupada that, Srila Prabhupada, this is such a sacred place. Can we establish a little centre here for preaching? We'll do Harinam here every day. I said, no. This is for very advanced devotees to come, that deep meditation, bhajan, like that. It's not for even kirtan. It has a different purpose, So, and of course, therefore, and which is, what we're coming to here, is that we learn this from the Guru, and we get that instruction in the Bhagavad Gita. So when Arjuna first went to the Battle of Kurukshetra, he was thinking, you know, in terms that, oh, this war will have a good outcome here. You know, I'll be nicely set up, I'll be happy, and myself, my relatives, and you know, we'll just finish our problems and we'll rule the kingdom, everything will be lovely. And then he looked at that, in that sacred place, even in the presence of the personality of Godhead Krishna, he was actually thinking in his own terms, according to his bodily perspective on life. And he became, he lost control of his mind and senses. And he had to ask, he addressed Krishna as Hrishikesha, that you are the master of the senses. You please give me instruction as to how I should engage my mind and senses, because the way that I'm considering to utilize my mind and senses is just giving me so much trouble. And he accepted Krishna as Guru, and Krishna was able to explain to Arjuna the process by which our mind and senses, our words and intelligence should all be engaged for the pleasure of the personality of Godhead, who is the proprietor of everything, and that is the teaching of the Gita. So to learn that process, one actually has to approach a bona fide guru. So Arjuna, of course, he had the opportunity to speak from, to hear directly from Krishna, and we understand through Arjuna. So Arjuna surrendered his mind and senses and his activities to Krishna, and so Arjuna becomes a representative guru, and down the disciplic succession, we understand that the only way we can know how to serve Krishna is to take instruction from a bona fide spiritual master. Otherwise, it is not possible to directly serve Krishna. So because we have these, here it describes we have these problems, the words shantaya, kutastaya, svarochise are very significant. Although the Lord is within this material world, he is not disturbed by the waves of material existence. So we see that on the Battle of Kurukshetra, Arjuna is perspiring, his tears were coming from his eyes, his skin was burning, so disturbed, he dropped his bow and he just literally couldn't function. But Krishna was just smiling. However, conditioned souls are agitated by six kinds of transformations. Namely, they become agitated when they are hungry, when they are thirsty, when they are aggrieved, when they are illusioned, when they grow old, and when they are on their deathbed. So those six types of disturbances. Although conditioned souls become very easily illusioned by these conditions in the material world, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as the Super Soul, Vasudeva, is never agitated by these transformations. So that is the difference between us and the Supreme Lord, that the Lord is the Super Soul, here described as Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. So of course the Super Soul exists in three features: as Mahavishnu, the Super Soul exists as the Super Soul of the whole material energy, and just by his glance he agitated the material energy And then gradually, through his breathing, the seeds of the universe has entered into the Mahatattva and gradually become covered by the different layers. And then he expanded as Garbhalakshay Vishnu, a super soul within each and every universe. And then he expands as Shivarakshay Vishnu, the super soul within the heart of every living entity and within each and every atom. So the super soul exists in those three features as Vasudeva. So he is never disturbed by the material world. He's completely in control of it. Therefore, it is said, Kutastaya, that he is always peaceful and devoid of agitation because of his prowess, which is described herein as Svarucchise, indicating that he is illuminated by his own transcendental position. In other words, the individual soul, although within the illumination of the Supreme, so we're also within the illumination of the Lord, we sometimes fall down from that illumination because of the tiny position. And when we fall down, we enter into the material conditioned life. The Lord, however, is not subject to such conditioning. Therefore, he is described as self-illuminated. Consequently, any conditioned soul within this material universe can remain completely perfect when he is under the protection of Vasudeva or when he is engaged in devotional service. So here, of course, we learn to take shelter of Vasudeva because he is situated in his own self-illuminated position. He has nothing to do with the material energy. He exists separately from material energy. He controls material energy as a super soul. And he controls all living entities within him. So if we take shelter of him, we can also, as it says here, remain completely perfect under his protection, engaged in devotional service. So Srila Prabhupada, you know, he has said this paraphrased this in many different times, but basically he says that, and what Lord Shiva is saying is that Lord Shiva understands that it's within our grasp whether we become controlled and disturbed by the material energy or whether we remain in a completely liberated position, a transcendentally blissful position, and that's within our grasp because we can actually take full shelter of the personality of Godhead. So that's within our power. So here, although the personality of Godhead is the controller of everyone, even the most powerful demigods, sometimes people are against the principle of God because they don't want to be controlled. But actually, although we're tiny little spirit souls, it's actually within our full control that even when we take shelter of the Supreme Lord, that's within our full control. And by that, we become completely free from the material energy. In the same way that we see that children, you know, they take shelter of their parents. They understand, you take shelter of the parents. Then in that situation, we know that all our problems are resolved. You know, we don't have to wonder how we're going to get fed every day or where we're going to sleep or who will protect us, and we don't have to think about those things. And then, you know, they live their life independently. You know, developing their own personality to the best they can be, and their particular skills, and you know, developing their education to do the particular type of work they'd like to do. So that independence is there. So actually being controlled by the Supreme Lord is something very disturbing to people. Of course, what they don't understand is there is no question of never being controlled by the Lord. We either, you know, we may say, I've got two options. I can be in light, I can be in darkness. Well, that's not good enough. But actually, we can't make other options. You know, there's either light, there's dark. You know, that's the nature of this world. If there's no light, then you're in darkness. You have no choice. So these things, you know, there are many things. You know, we might say, oh, I don't want to live under a government. But you just try and get the best government. But actually, you know, we have to live under someone's rule in this world. So it's a very foolish concept that I'm just independent. I'm independent from the sun, it's light and darkness. I'm independent from any government. I'm independent from it just doesn't exist. But if people feel that I can be like that with the Supreme Lord. So here, Lord Shiva is acknowledging that he is fully under the control of the Supreme Lord. Now, this is, of course, we're here in the fourth canto. And when we get to the ninth canto, we actually hear something more, that actually the Lord says, actually, I'm not actually independent. I'm fully under the control of my devotees. Because that's his free, he does that voluntarily. There's that nice verse in the ninth canto. I'm sure you're all aware of this verse. Ninth canto, chapter 4, text number 63. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said to the Brahman, of course, you know, he's talking to Devasa Muni. Devasa Muni is learning the hard way how the Lord is under the control of his devotees' love. So the Lord had actually given Ambarish, this Sudarshan Chakra, that's there for you. You know, it's the Lord's weapon, Sudarshan. Sudarshan is like the original vision, the pure transcendental vision of the Lord, which also manifests as the... And so when the Lord glanced at the material energy, that glance, that darshan is the glance, the vision of the Lord. That set everything into motion. So the Sudarshan Chakra is in fact the source of everything in material creation, including all our senses. So he had given that which is the source of all the senses in the material world, which is my personal weapon, my own glance, I give that to you. Any problems come up in Ambarish Maharaj? Sudarshan be there. So, of course, we see that Devasa Muni, he went all over the universe. Prabhupada says every nook and corner. He went to Brahma, he went to Shiva, and none of them could help him. And we understand from that pastime that actually Vishnu, Krishna, is supreme. And so he says, I am completely under the control of my devotees. Indeed, I am not at all independent. Because my devotees are completely devoid of material desires, they never think in terms of what is their own personal happiness, always in terms of Krishna's happiness. I sit only within the core of their hearts. What to speak of my devotee? Even those who are devotees of my devotee are very dear to me. So here we see that this is the loving exchange. And of course, so people are very fearful that, oh, I don't want to be under the control of God. But actually, you know, people want to become one with God, they want to become God. Prabhupada says, Vaishnavas become, they want to become greater than God. You know, not in a, you know, a demoniac way, I'm controlling God, now the world is mine, I'm taking it off you. Not in that way. But in the sense that they want to love the Lord so much that it melts the Lord's heart. And he gives his heart to them, like that, in that sense, by love. But controlling God means that, you know, I want to serve you. You know, I'm ready to offer you some food. Sit down and eat, please, Krishna. And Krishna becomes controlled by the love of those devotees. Now, we know that, and therefore, of course, you know, very interesting, not coincidental, but when we celebrate Janmashtami, the highlight, the conclusion, is the next day, Prabhupada's appearance day. It's like it builds up to that big, big celebration. That's Krishna's arrangement. And now, to demonstrate this, we know that you know, in Jagannath Puri, they always sing the prayers daily to Jayadeva Goswami. And of course, in the invocation of Jayadeva Goswami's Gita Govinda, which Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati the Kaur said, that's not fit for the devotees to read. No, very elevated devotees. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, with a few confidential one, two, he would discuss those pastimes in Gita Govinda. Otherwise, not discuss. And so, you know, I think he allowed one copy to be printed or something like that. He was very, very strict. In fact, I was listening yesterday that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati the Kaur, he himself wouldn't bathe in Radhakund because he didn't feel he was fit. He'd take a few drops of water. Because we're invited to, by the Goswamis, by the scriptures, to do that. But we go there, we don't hang around and splash around and carry on. We go there in a very humble mood, very grateful mood, we take those blessings like that. But Jayadeva Goswami, his prayers are sung because Lord Jagannath requested that his prayers be sung. There was actually a king who also wrote a Gita Govinda. You know the story? Yeah. So what happened was that Jayadeva Goswami had gone to Vrindavan and he'd come back, and you know, all the people loved his. And but what happened was that you know, he wanted that those prayers that were for Jagannath, because Jagannath Dham is called Vipralamba Bhava Dham, you know, the place of separation from Krishna, very, very elevated place, actually. And he wanted those prayers with the mood of separation from Krishna, and he wanted Krishna to enjoy those, you know, those prayers which are in that mood. Because when Jayadeva Goswami, this is like 11th, 12th century. This is before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and these concepts of, you know, how Krishna and becomes you know, subservient to his devotee Radharani, and they're in a superior position, they're unheard of even then. So he was sort of giving a little prelude. So he wanted them, but the king said, "Oh, I have written my own Gita Govinda. That shall be." So they took it to the Brahmanas, and the Brahmanas decided, let Jagannath decide himself. So, and we know, as I said, in the invocation there, we get those Dasavatar Stotra prayers. We sing in the Sringanath prayers. So they put the two books in the room with the Jagannath in the deity room, and they locked the door, and then they went home and took rest. I would say, well, we'll see, you know, Lord Jagannath, he'll let us know. So when they come in the morning, you know, the pages of the king's Gita Govinda were ripped out, strewn all over the room. And Jayadev Goswami's Gita Govinda was tucked under Lord Jagannath's arm. Oh, Jagannath has spoken. And of course, 500 years ago, King Prataparudra, he made a law, it's still a law today. Only Jayadev's Gita Govinda prayers will be sung daily to Lord Jagannath. So that's actually a law. So anyway, now, when Jayadev Goswami was writing Gita Govinda, he came to a certain point and he wanted to express how Krishna is controlled by his devotees, and he wanted to write how Krishna would place Radharani's lotus feet upon his head. But he couldn't find references in those days, scriptural references. So he decided, I'll just leave it. He didn't know what to write. He wanted to write something, and he didn't, but I don't know. And he did, I'll go and take a bath. So he went down to the river to take a bath. While he was down there, Krishna came to his home and disguised himself as Jayadev Goswami. Jayadev Goswami was married, and that was also the direct spoken request of Lord Jagannath. That's another story. Anyway, so you're probably wondering, you know, how's he going home to his wife? So he goes home, so he was renunciated, but for the pleasure of Lord Jagannath, he married. So he went home, Krishna went there, disguised as Jayadev Goswami, and he went in, had a Krishna Mataji, you know, the wife, not Mataji, but, you know, Devi. And, you don't call your wife Mataji, you call her Devi, just slap your face. But, and she was preparing an offering for Radha Madhava, the deities, and he went in, and he saw the pen and the space, and he wrote the prayers himself. He wrote these beautiful prayers, how he approached Radharani and prayed to her. You please, you know, quell this fire of my love for you and place your lotus feet upon my head. Like that. So he wrote these beautiful prayers there. So then, of course, Jayadev Goswami, you know, Krishna left, but of course his wife said, well, you haven't eaten the bhushara. I've offered that to Krishna. So Krishna had to eat it twice. He had to eat it on the offering, and he had to eat it as well. So he ate the offering twice. So, and then he quickly left. And then Jayadev Goswami, he came back and saw, and he just fainted. And he said to his wife, you were the most fortunate woman in this world. Krishna has personally come to eat your foods like that. And so anyway, they were both in ecstasy. But it shows you. Now, the interesting thing here is in this verse here, 9.4.63, that Krishna says, I am the heart. What does he say? He says, I sit within the core of their hearts. So, the Lord, the heart of Jayadev Goswami, you can see in that past time, is the same as the heart of the Lord. What Jayadev Goswami is thinking, Krishna is thinking. What Krishna is thinking, Jayadev Goswami is thinking. Okay. If we want to understand Krishna, if we want to know how to please Krishna, to serve Krishna, we take shelter of the devotees of the Lord who are very dear to Krishna. And then you will know. So actually, going back to the bike rack, I said to one of the Prabhus as he was leaving today, he's a very nice man, that I said, you know, this is how we understand things. If we walk up to this, and anything in this temple, and we see, this belongs to Prabhupada. Prabhupada is engaging all these things in Krishna's service. then we'll know exactly how to see. If we walk up to that same place and we don't think of Prabhupada, we will not see things properly. So the secret, if we want to understand how to serve Krishna, we have to think, what is his standard? What is his mood? What is his writings? What does he think about how, Krishna should be served, about this or that? If we do that, we will understand exactly what Krishna thinks about it. And if we jump over that process, we will not understand how to serve Krishna. Even the opportunity is there, the senses are there, we will not. We will think of something else. According to the bodily concept of life, which we're all, always disturbed by. Can't put my bike here, it will cause some dissatisfaction of my sense gratification. So our service, revolves around those things. We shouldn't laugh. Don't laugh because I'm the worst, believe me. I feel embarrassed. But that is the secret, to understanding how to serve Krishna. Srila Prabhupada, he understood that the perfection of Krishna consciousness, he was sitting in Vrindavan, and he was a Brajabasi. He said, in Vrindavan I had no anxiety. I was very comfortable, very happy, very blissful. Said, but why have I come to New York? It's so much inconvenience, so much distress. Because that is the order of my spiritual master. So he taught us that if you want to see Krishna, it's not that we, put our heads in the Gita Govinda, we'll go and build a little house near Radhakund. No. If you want, you do what Prabhupada did. Let us go to the cities where there are so many fallen souls, and let us show compassion for them and help them to understand this verse, that if they take shelter of Vasudeva, who is never disturbed, they will also become never disturbed by the material existence. And if we do that, not only we will understand properly how to serve Krishna, but Krishna will reveal himself. Prabhupada expected that. One time Prabhupada went to the Dallas temple, and there was a pujari there, been there pujari for about 5 years. So Srila Prabhupada said to him, "So, what is the mood of the student?" And the pujari's like, "The mood?" I didn't know he had a mood. And he just sort of, there was nothing, just a blank. But Prabhupada, expected, no, you should understand. You're serving the deity daily. You should understand the mood of the deity. Daily, for years, you should understand. You see? Prabhupada, he was expecting that level. But we get that by serving Srila Prabhupada, very dear devotee, and by understanding Srila Prabhupada's heart, we will understand Krishna's heart. Therefore, Yasya Prasada, Bhagavad Prasada. So if we serve the spiritual master, and of course, Srila Prabhupada has trained up his followers, and we as it says here, what to speak of my devotee, even those who are devotees of my devotee are very dear to me. So serving Srila Prabhupada means that If someone is very dear servant of Srila Prabhupada, you serve them as well. You get the same benefit. And if someone is very dear to the servant of the servant, you serve that person, you get the same benefit. And in this way, actually, Krishna, who is the controller of everything, becomes controlled by, you know, the humble service that a devotee is doing. So, some spiritual food for thought. Any questions or comments?
Lord Chaitanya promised Banasura that he will help him against the demon. Then, when Lord Chaitanya fought with Lord Krishna, at the end, why did Lord Krishna send the Sudarshan Chakra to Lord Chaitanya? Because he had a promise.
Yes, Lord Shiva's purpose was to show the glories of Krishna. So, you know, even when Lord Shiva sometimes fights with Krishna, because he wants to show that I can't beat him. People keep saying I'm supreme, but I can't beat Krishna. So, you know, Krishna's purpose is to, Lord Shiva's purpose, he wants to show the greatness of, sometimes Lord Shiva would fight with Arjuna. And different, you know, and again, he wanted to show, oh, you know, look at Arjuna, he's wonderful, like that. So, of course, Banasura, you know, he was coming in the line from Bali Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj, because Prahlad was so dear to the Lord, Krishna, and Srinidhi, that even when Banasura acted in the demoniac ways, just Krishna still gave him his mercy because he was associated with such a dear devotee. See? So, and you know, he was, so that's the, what we understand, that, you know, we may be the biggest rascal. I certainly am. I'm not joking. But if we can somehow do a little service to great devotees like Srila Prabhupada and their followers, then Krishna will give us his full mercy. And we're not demons, at least like Banasura. That's all good. All right, let's just say good day. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.